The nearly complete fossilized skeletons of two dinosaurs fighting to the death were found in Montana in 2006. They represent a major new discovery in paleontology because both may be previously unknown kinds of dinosaurs, and the way they're entangled mid-fight could provide new insights into dinosaur behavior. However, to the dismay of museums and paleontologists across the country, the skeletons aren't going to a science lab for further study. Instead, they'll be sold to the highest bidder at an auction right here in New York City in November. Dr. Matthew Carano, curator of Dinosauria at the Smithsonian's National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C., joins us now. And we're going to be talking about the importance of the Montana doodling dinosaurs, how museums such as his own usually acquire fossils of that sort, and the impact that the private market is having on his field. Welcome to our show.
Thanks very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
The fossilized skeletons of the two dinosaurs were found over 7 years ago. Why has it taken them so long to go to auction?
Well, I suspect that much of the time has been in just the preparation of the fossils. When you remove them from a site, they usually come out in a solid block, and a lot of the work is then done in the laboratory to get the bones to the point where you can actually see them all and understand what you've really found.
And are these being worked on by scientists, or are they being worked on by people in the private sector?
Well, it's a little of both. The Black Hills Institute is a private organization, but they do employ a lot of people with essentially good scientific training. They know how to dig out fossils and prepare them. But I think in terms of a formal course of scientific study, I don't think that that is underway yet.
Well, many paleontologists who have seen pictures of the fossils believe that each may be the skeleton of a new kind of dinosaur. But would they need to inspect them up close to determine whether they really are?
Yeah, I think that there's a set of analyses that any scientist would want to do with the fossils, some of which would involve actually sampling the bone in the fossil to determine the individual ages of these animals. One of the big questions that we have is whether they represent adults of new species that are small or whether they are juveniles of larger species that we already know.
And what makes these two dinosaurs distinct?
Well, if they are adults and they're very small individuals, then that would be quite distinct. The place that they're found, most of the things we know are really large animals, things like Tyrannosaurus rex or Triceratops. So that would make them distinct right there. But then the situation in which they're found, where they're in very close proximity, this predator and then this plant-eating dinosaur, might involve something like a fight. It could be a situation that might tell us a little bit about the behavior of these animals. But again, we'd need to do a really rigorous course of study to make sure of that.
Have we been able to determine whether they were damaged as a result of the fight?
Not that I know of. I think that at the moment, the way that they've been prepared shows you very nicely these skeletons. But there, again, is sort of a set of analyses that paleontologists have that allow us to look at the arrangement of the animals, the sediment they're in, and try to test the different ideas about how those animals came to be arranged in the way they are. So I don't think any of that has actually gone on yet.
Who discovered them? They were found in Montana, where many dinosaur fossils seem to turn up. Was that an area rich in dinosaurs, or just an area that is rich in fossils because of just the natural environment of the area?
Well, Montana is a kind of ideal combination of two things that paleontologists look for when they're trying to decide where to look for dinosaurs. One, the rocks that are underneath much of the state of Montana were laid down during the time that dinosaurs were alive on Earth. So that's sort of the minimum requirement. But also, Montana being a state that is a relatively dry state, you don't have to worry so much about everything being covered in vegetation. You can actually see the rocks when you're walking around on the ground. Here on the East Coast, we very rarely get to do that, even though we sometimes have rocks of the right age.
Now, these dinosaurs were found on private property. What are the rules for that? Does the government have different rules whether a fossil is found on public or private property?
Yeah, in the sense that we don't really have rules about fossils that are found on private property, the general sense is that fossils are minerals. That's kind of the tradition here in the U.S. And so finding a fossil isn't very much different from finding oil or a gold deposit on your property. It's simply up to the landowner to decide what he or she wants to do with it.
But what
public land, there's a lot of rules.
Now, don't other countries consider fossils to be similar to ancient works of art that have been dug up as part of their national heritage?
They do. The U.S. is a little bit unusual in having such wide latitude, even with privately discovered specimens. In many countries, the fossils are considered to be a form of a heritage of the country, and many countries consider all the fossils to be the property of the people of the country, regardless of where they're discovered.
What happens in other fossil-rich areas in Africa and Asia? Are there fossil hunters in Mongolia?
There are, and because the fossils of Mongolia are very rigidly protected by the law of that country, most of that collecting in Mongolia is illegal. Because it's a vast desert, much of it, it's impossible to really patrol it all. It's not too difficult to go in and illegally harvest these fossils, but there is no legal way to remove, say, a dinosaur skeleton from Mongolia without the permission of the government.
Are fossil hunters just as capable of properly excavating fossils as museum-sponsored archaeologists and scientists?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I think the there's an enormous range of skills out there, as you'd imagine. The best trained and most skillful private collectors certainly can be as good as people who are working for museums. So, again, the Black Hills Institute, who's been collecting this fossil, they have a long history of collecting, very good collecting in terms of the skills involved. But then on the other hand, you get people who simply do what we call smash and grab. They run into quarries in the middle of the night, hammer out what they can, and then run. And that involves a lot of destruction.
Does your museum's expeditionary team ever have to compete with private prospectors for the same areas of land to excavate?
It's become a bit of a competition in terms of gaining access to private land. I think when fossils go for auction and when they occasionally get these really high prices, then there's an expectation sometimes on the part of private landowners that a museum can just shell out many millions of dollars to look for fossils on their land, when that's not really the case. We really rely much more on the goodwill of our fellow American citizens and on generosity of donors and things like that. But it's really not possible for us to compete financially at an auction house the way I think that a private company or private individual could.
I'm speaking with Dr. Matthew Carano of the Smithsonian's National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C. We're talking about these clashing dinosaurs that are going to be put up for auction. And you mentioned the price. It was reported in the New York Times that the Smithsonian said it was told it could submit private bids at this auction for about $15 million, but the Smithsonian turned it down because the Times said that amount was just too high. How much can something like this, which is a unique situation, actually fetch? Are we talking about $100 million?
That's, I would say, pretty excessive.
Okay, 50,000, 50 million? 25?
If I had to guess, I would suspect you're talking about single-digit million-dollar bids for something like this. That's a hunch. Mm-hmm. We don't have a formal way of pricing fossils, in the scientific side of things. So all we can do is look at previous auctions. It's like looking at an Antiques Roadshow where you say, well, the last time something sold similar to this, it sold for this amount of money. That's really the boat we're all in when we try and sort of estimate what we think it'll go for. But we don't have any sort of catalog that says, it's unique and it's this big and therefore it's worth this much money.
So this is different than when other precious items are sold at auction, like old paintings or antiques?
I think it's a little bit more similar to a painting in that every painting is unique, but the difference is you're probably talking about something like Picasso or Monet, where you have a whole range of things by that person that people know and that maybe people have already bid on and paid for. You know, the number of these auctions, high price auctions for fossils, is still pretty low, and each one depends very heavily on what people think of it, what's out there economically, and what people can do. A lot of auctions in recent years have failed to draw the money that people have asked for.
Well, how large are these dueling dinosaurs? Would they fit into a large living room? Would you put them would a wealthy person put them in a home the same way they might put a large sculpture?
Well, I think you're talking about a large sculpture, so something with the base of, you know, Michelangelo's David. So, somebody who could afford to buy this would have a home with a room that big in it. That's probably feasible. But they're sizable. You're talking about, you know, 10 or 12 feet in each direction for a block of these dinosaurs.
And you wouldn't want to put it in your backyard.
You would never want to expose it, I think, to the elements. They would not last very long, subject to rain and wind and snow and things like that.
Are there companies that sell rare fossils as home decoration, kind of geo-decor?
There are. I mean, there are certainly plenty of places you can go online and look to buy fossils, and they're just selling to whoever buys them. And most people, I think, are buying them, you know, they'll buy a tooth or a claw, more as a keepsake. These really big specimens that go for auction, I think, is really much more about the sort of art appeal, the collector appeal, things like that.
Who gets the money? Is it the landowner who owns the fossils, or the prospectors who came and dug them up?
That tends to be decided case by case. So usually when you're digging on private land, you have some agreement with the landowner. Either the landowner's donated your rights to look for fossils, or if you're a private person, you have some sort of contract. So in this case, I don't know the specifics of what the arrangement is between all the parties involved, but in general, some amount of that money would go to one or both of those parties.
Well, as a curator of Dinosauria for the Natural History Museum, do you rely mostly on donations, or do you have teams going out to search for dinosaurs in the Gobi Desert and in Montana and other places where they've been found?
We have a very active staff of paleontologists here, and we're out every year looking for new fossils, not just dinosaurs. I was in Montana myself collecting fossils just about 2 weeks ago, and that's something that's ongoing. But certainly we have a history of some very generous donations to our collections, and those can be individual fossils. They can be collections of fossils, and they are always an important part of augmenting the national collections.
They also are important to museums like yours because they attract visitors.
Absolutely. And a fossil like this, you know, to me, I think there's always the scientific question of, you know, what are these dinosaurs and how did they get to be in this, you know, in this deposit? But I think there is a sort of almost intangible value to someone who comes to our museum and sees this something incredibly dramatic, something unique. And that is, in some regard, you know, independent of whether they're fighting dinosaurs or not.
Now, what's your hope of what will happen after this auction? Because, as you point out, we don't know whether these are adult dinosaurs or young dinosaurs, and only serious lab work would determine that and determine some other things about these dinosaurs, whether they are unique species. It is possible that somebody will buy them and then give them to a museum, but it is also possible that a museum never will, or scientists will never really get the opportunity to examine them the way they would like to.
That's true. I think that nicely brackets the universe of possibilities for this outcome. And I, you know, obviously, my hope is that they end up in a museum one way or another, that they find their way into a repository that can make them available in perpetuity. And I think that's the one thing we really value about our role at the Smithsonian, is that everything that's in this collection is essentially held in trust for Americans forever. And so, you know, anybody can study these specimens. Anybody can learn from these specimens. I think, you know, the middle ground is that even if they are in private hands, it's not impossible that someone would make them available to study, even in that capacity. And that's happened with privately held fossils of scientific importance in the past.
So, although you have suggested earlier that fossils of this size don't go up for sale very often.
Not very often, no. I think, you know, the classic things are things like Sue, the Tyrannosaurus Rex. You know, they really make a kind of a newsworthy moment. And so there really have been just a handful of these in the last 10 or 15 years.
Now, people steal gems and paintings from museums. Do people ever steal fossils from museums? A listener wants to know.
They do. They absolutely do. There are big and small security issues at museums around the world. There have been some serious thefts from the Paleontology Museum in Moscow in the last 10 or 15 years of dinosaur fossils from their exhibit. And so we're always, you know, looking for ways to make things more secure. But I think in private hands, we've had the same problem. I know of very important fossils in private hands that have also been stolen. And so, the possibility for loss exists across the board.
Now, we have found dinosaur fossils with sitting on their own eggs. Now we have found dinosaurs in battle. Is this the first time we have found fossils in battle?
It actually is not. There's a really spectacular pair of dinosaurs that were found in Mongolia in the early 1970s, and they're now in the museum in Warsaw in Poland, that are includes a plant-eating dinosaur and a velociraptor, which seem, to my mind, quite convincingly locked in final combat, to the extent that the arm of one dinosaur is actually stuck in the mouth of the other dinosaur.
Now, in both cases, you've talked about plant-eating dinosaurs fighting carnivores. Well, should we assume that that's the way it generally occurred?
I think that's probably the most common scenario for two dinosaurs to have been in some sort of a fight. There's some suggestion that that the carnivores may have fought each other as well, and we do see some evidence of wounds, like healed wounds, on some predatory dinosaurs. It seems like they're made by other predatory dinosaurs.
Dr. Matthew Carano is curator of Dinosauria at the Smithsonian's National Museum of Natural History in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much for being on our show today.
Well, thanks for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.